In today's episode of Backpacker Radio, presented by The Trek, we are running back the Appalachian Trail panel. That's right, AT Panel 2.0. This time, your favorite Cinnamon Connection are working in tandem to share some more of their top trail-tested advice for hiking the AT. This includes how to prevent against the biggest threat presented by the trail, the right resupply strategy, or lack thereof, how to train for the trail, and much more. We wrap the show with a triple crown of traits you'd want in a hiking partner, and we chat about some of our favorite down jacket options. But first,
Zach and I are both big fans of Gossamer Gear, manufacturers of lightweight backpacking gear and accessories. Their packs carry comfortably, their roomy shelters protect in harsh weather conditions, and the trekking poles are some of the lightest on the planet. Gossamer Gear is changing the perception of delicate ultralight gear. Zach and I are both users of Gossamer Gear's packs and shelters. Zach has used the Gorilla, their 40-liter pack, for more than 3,000 miles of backpacking, including his PCT through hike in 2017. Drink? He's a big proponent of their Gossamer Gear Light Flex hiking umbrella, which he used on the PCT and the Trans-Catalina Trail, and which he wished he had brought on many of his other hikes. I used Gossamer Gear's The One shelter and have also used the Two shelter, which for someone who's 5'1" feels like a palace. Good news, listeners of Backpacker Radio can score an exclusive deal on Gossamer Gear products. Use discount code LittleDonkeyGirl for 15% off your cart at gossamergear.com. Again, that's LittleDonkeyGirl, all one word, at gossamergear.com. Don't sleep on this, as the deal is only valid for a limited time.
If you've done any amount of research on which gear is best for long-distance backpacking, you are already familiar with our next sponsor. Enlighten Equipment specializes in manufacturing ultralight and minimalist gear that performs. From quilts and 8-ounce synthetic jackets to ultralight rain gear and wind pants, Enlighten Equipment offers a wide range of gear and apparel suited for anything the trail can throw your way. Based in the rolling bluffs of Winona, Minnesota, say that 5 times fast, Enlighten Equipment is a tried and true ultralight favorite for triple crowners, weekend warriors, and everyone in between. The name Enlighten Equipment is familiar because it's cited as the most used brand of sleeping bag or quilt from our most recent AT thru-hiker survey. Its popularity is not confined to the Appalachians, as it's a thru-hiker favorite across all trails, as they make a top quality product at a very fair price. Now, this is the part that you've been waiting for. Our friends at Enlighten Equipment are offering listeners of Backpacker Radio the rare 10% discount off Enlighten Equipment's best-selling stock Revelation quilt or tour jacket by using code ULTRALIGHT10 at checkout. That's ULTRALIGHT, the number 10, no spaces, at checkout at enlightenedequipment.com. This is a limited time code, so if you're in the market for a quality quilt and or a synthetic jacket, do not sleep on this deal. Welcome to Backpacker Radio, presented by The Trek. I'm your co-host, Zach Badger Davis. Sitting to my right is...
Hi, I'm Juliana Chauncey, a.k.a. Chaunce.
Question of the day. This is yours. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you got this off Reddit, right?
Yes.
How do you feel about mint chocolate chip ice cream?
Not a fan.
That's it?
I can understand, like, having a bite as if it was ginger between sushi, where you're just cleansing the palate because it's cold and it's got that kind of like minty toothpaste taste. But apart from that, it's got like that minty toothpaste mixed with chocolate taste.
Other flavors of ice cream, you have one bite of mint chocolate chip just to reset the palate.
If it was in front of me and the offer was extended and I was in the mood for ice cream, and in that specific circumstance, I would do it.
Coors Light tastes a little bit like bananas. I don't know what's happening here, but this tastes like banana juice to me. Does this taste banana-y?
And this is the part where I get COVID.
No, I already had it. I'm immune forever.
That's what they all say. Yep.
Doesn't it taste banana-y? Can you feel it?
It's because I'm thinking about bananas, but I'm also laughing. Wait, don't talk to me for a second. I have to concentrate.
Okay. Well, I'll give my answer while you're concentrating on the bananas of
the Coors?
I'm not, well.
I just say yes. You can
Here's
say yes.
The thing
yes.
is, I'm not getting it, but then when I think that, I kind of get like, you're not eating the banana, but maybe you're licking the outside of the banana.
Yeah, it's kind
of
so
like, faint banana.
Banana zest.
Yeah, like, or you're smelling like a scratch and sniff banana scented something.
But it tastes like bananas.
Very distant.
This shit is bananas. I would rather have mint chocolate chip ice cream than banana flavor. Banana flavored desserts are gross, with the exception of banana cream pie.
I don't know. I think I would take a banana flip. Well, see, I also wouldn't want that many bites of a banana ice cream.
Actually,
but I'd take,
it
that
back.
Over.
There's a lot of really good banana desserts.
You like a banana split?
Banana split is delicious. Banana Foster's.
If you had a banana ice cream that had like peanut butter.
See, banana ice cream, I think, is where I draw the line. If you got peanut butter involved, I could overcome it. But so fun. This was amazing that you came up with this, because this is the only ice cream flavor that I feel particularly strongly about. Because it used to be my favorite.
Oh.
Legitimately my favorite flavor ice cream. Until, and this is a perfect subject for today's show, the half gallon challenge.
Oh, no, you did not do it. You did mint chocolate chip for that?
I sure did.
You hate yourself?
Well, and I also learned that I think I have like a mild lactose intolerance, because once I got about halfway into my half gallon, I just hit a wall. But I wasn't going to be defeated, so I powered through. And it was a spectacle. Like, I was being dramatic, but like, I was doing push-ups. Like, but there was just a...
You get this part of the half gallon challenge where you're between 3 and 4 pints in, where you start getting like real macho. As someone who didn't do it and maintained a level head from start to finish watching others do it, there's a point where like the push-ups come out and like, you know, you start like banging your fists and like hyping yourself up.
Well, so here's an advanced tip is get something salty, because I felt like shit after my half gallon. And then I went into the general store and I got a thing of French fries, I want to say. And I felt totally fine after. I mean, I felt uncomfortably full, but my palate was reset. I think having the salt to counteract the sweetness of the ice cream, or maybe the lactose. I don't know what was happening, but yeah. So it went from my favorite ice cream to like, legitimately, I haven't had a bowl of it since. It's been over 10 years.
Wow. I mean, that's a way to send out a flavor.
Yeah. I feel like it's akin to puking something up. Like, everyone's, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people have had the moment where they puke up Jägermeister, and like, that's the end of the Jäger career.
Yeah. I just can't imagine, knowing you'd have to eat a half gallon, you'd pick a flavor as strong as mint chocolate chip.
I'm like, this is my old faithful. I can't fuck this up. And then I immediately fucked it up.
Yeah. It's when you went from a boy to a man.
That was the moment. No, and then whatever the section north of the general store, I unloaded the like most violent dump of my life. I don't remember too many poops in my life. Like, ones where it didn't end poorly in terms of getting it on myself. But I remember this one, and it was next level. That's what made me think I have some sort of lactose intolerance, is because it's just like, no one shits like that if they're digesting something in a healthy way.
Yeah, it's hard to know when you've eaten a half gallon of ice cream, but I didn't do it because of that reason, because I knew I don't get along well with ice cream.
Yeah.
So I got a small kid's cup of Llamalicious ice cream.
What is Llamalicious?
It looked like a unicorn threw up in a cup. Mm. And it tasted like cotton candy mixed with like glitter.
Yeah.
It was great.
Ice cream's so fucking good.
It was great. Except mint chocolate chip, which is fine. Absolutely fine. That's something I feel like the older I get, the more I'll like. Like, how I'm going to start liking those little like Andes mint chocolates that sit in like a tray at your grandma's house.
I was actually brainstorming Triple Crowns, and that was one thing. I don't know how to phrase it, but like, foods that you thought that you would like as an adult, like you thought you would just acclimate to enjoying them, and then you still don't. I forgot what my example was, but there was something that I was eating the other day because I felt like it's an adult food. I'm like, I quit. I can't do it.
Wow. Prunes?
No. That's a little, that's geriatric. That's beyond adult.
Oh, okay.
It was a vegetable of some kind. I don't remember what it was. Oh, balsamic vinaigrette salads.
I was going to say this is not going to end up being a vegetable.
Well, it was a salad, but specifically the dressing. And maybe this was
the dressing.
Maybe, yeah. I know it's like the healthy dressing, but, and I think this particular dressing was too vinegary.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just balsamic vinegar that I had. I don't know. But
I forgot the oil.
It wasn't good. It was like, I would rather have just eaten it like a fucking rabbit, like just raw dog in it.
There are some I like and some I don't like, and I can't tell what the difference between
probably the oil. I'm imagining the more fat that's involved.
Even those ones, there's still some where like the balsamic's different, and some will use like a red wine type one.
Anyways, I retire on balsamic vinegar.
Maybe it's not red wine. Maybe it's just red balsamic. I don't know.
We're not even high, guys.
No. But I did think in the middle of that and this, Triple Crown of mint-flavored things. Because that's vague enough to go different places.
Should we couch it and save it for...
Yep.
Okay.
That on the back burner.
This is a long question of the day tangent. Reminders of any kind? We don't really have much of an update, but still just trail days. That's the exciting thing.
Yes, it's coming up. It's 2.5 months away.
So here's what I will say is it looks like we're kind of torn between a particular place in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Asheville as the host for our meetup, which will be happening, we hope. And we want you guys to let us know which one we should do. Maybe the louder voice will win. Maybe.
Yeah. Neither of us are very sold. Not that we're not sold, but we're just like, we're not so strongly pulled to one that we're automatically ruling out the other. So if anyone has a very good reason for why we should choose one instead of the other, be very vocal about it, because we're going to hear the loud noises and think that that's the majority.
So when cities are vying for the Olympics, they give their pitches and like, we're going to build these stadiums and we're going to do all these amazing things for you. If you guys could just do that a little bit.
Yeah. What are you going to build for us when we come to perhaps your city?
Yeah. Yeah. What will you build for
us? You know, like what?
We got a few Boone votes. There were a couple of others in the area too. Boone is where Appalachian State is. It's a very cool town. Yeah. Anyways.
I don't know much about anything off the trail.
Don't know much about history. That should be the intro for your podcast. Okay.
Yeah, it should.
Let's go. We're going to do part two of the AT panel. And it's just Chance and I today. Jabba was not invited because we don't like him anymore.
I hate him.
No.
He's got too much to do with his HR responsibilities.
Truth be told, this is happening because today's guest bailed at the last minute.
He had a family emergency.
Bail is the wrong word. Fell through. Yeah. No shade. But we left the last AT panel thinking like, damn, there's still a lot of uncovered ground here. And we're going to just knock it out, because I think that some of the bigger tips are honestly going to be in my part two today. Like things that if I were going to give someone advice, I would probably start with some of these items.
Yeah, I my brain lagged for a bit while I was taking my notes down, but I'm really pleased with one of the ones I thought of.
There it is. Do you want to go first?
No.
Okay. I'm going to start with, I think, the most important thing that I'd like to convey to anyone hiking the AT, and that is to permethrin your clothing. Mm-hmm. Deer ticks are everywhere on the AT. I didn't talk about this last time,
did
I?
We did talk about like the frequency between permethrins, but I think it was in response to a question.
Yeah, this was a listener question. Okay, so in the context of talking purely advice for hiking the AT, I can't not bring this out explicitly because this is really important. I know plenty of people who have gotten Lyme disease on the AT with varying degrees of how long they've suffered from it. Some people just took the antibiotics right away and were totally fine, and then other people's dealt with symptoms for months or years. It's just not something that you want to fuck around with, and it's not a reason to not hike the AT, because there is a good solution, and again, that is permethrin. Sawyer makes it. There's also the factory application method. You could send your clothing to Insect Shield, which is what I would recommend, because the treatment lasts much longer versus doing it at home, but it's also more expensive. I don't know. I guess if you
How long does it take? Like if I was, because it wouldn't last the whole trip. So if I was on the trail and I wanted to send my stuff, I'd have to send all my stuff and laundry clothes.
I've been trying to think through like what the most effective way to do this.
I think you'd send it out beforehand and then Sawyer it along the way.
What
right?
I was thinking is potentially just have two outfits.
Oh, I'm thinking like I permethrined everything. I permethrined my backpack, my sleeping bag, my tent. I know they tell you not to. I did it.
No, I think it says on the bottle that
I don't
you
know
can,
if sleeping bags are you're supposed to.
I've never done a sleeping bag, but
I saw a tick in the inside of my tent at the Duncannon. No, not Duncannon. The brewery. What's the one? Devil's Backbone. Mm, yeah. There was a tick inside my tent, and that happened, and I sprayed everything with permethrin inside and out.
So maybe that's it, is having two outfits, sending them to a place like Insect Shield that can do the factory treatment, which lasts, I forget what it was, like 6 to 10 times longer, much longer. And then doing the Sawyer to your gear because, you want to get permethrin on anything that's going to come in contact with the ground, which when you're through hiking is everything.
The nice thing, too, is you're not going to use a whole one of the big yellow spray bottles. So it's like a team building experience with your friends where you're like, hey, I got this big ass bottle of permethrin. I can't use it all. Do you guys want to permethrin all our stuff? And then everyone's going to be like, oh, my God, you're so cool. Let me spray that bottle. And you're going to make loads of friends.
Yeah, for sure. And in addition, I'm just going to use the first overall tip is doing the proper deer tick stuff. So permethrin is a big one, but also anytime you're walking through tall grass, because even though I am terrified of deer ticks, I don't think I could handle in the summer of Southern Appalachia walking through with pants on. So anytime you're walking through tall grass and your skin is exposed, just make sure to check yourself, whether that's after you get through like a grassy patch, and that happens often enough that that might be a pain in the ass, but at least every 24 hours, if you catch it within 24 hours, according to, I believe it's the CDC, that's not long enough for the bacteria to get into your system and for you to get sick. So it's very important that you catch it within a day of it latching into you. Let's see. I, again, should have prepared better for this, but I know the proper way to get a tick off of you is to, there's a lot of different methods that you'll hear out there, old wives' tales about people like burning it off and doing shit like that. The most effective method is to have tweezers and to, and we'll include this in the show notes. There's a couple of articles, really well done articles on the track about this, but you want to pull it up at the head. If you do the fire trick, there's a chance that the thing's going to like barf its bacteria back into your system, which is going to defeat the purpose. So there's right ways and wrong ways to go about this. But the overarching thing is to take deer ticks very seriously because you don't want to get Lyme disease. And in the scenario that you do get Lyme disease, you want to make sure that you're hypersensitive to the symptoms and that you get it taken care of very quickly. I know people that have started the trail with a prescription for the antibiotic. I forget what it is offhand. You know, the probability that you're going to have a bite is high enough that that's not a crazy thing to do. I didn't do that. Luckily, I didn't get Lyme disease. Unluckily, I did get West Nile virus. Trying to think what else someone should know.
There was just this like one terrifying part where I was hiking with Mr. Perfect and we were in this field and I was going behind him and I saw his legs and I saw just like multiple bugs crawling up it. And I like got his attention and pointed to it. And we stopped and we looked down and it was like, you know, when you stand on an anthill, how many ants there are?
Yeah.
It was like this field was like a tick anthill and they were just, we couldn't swat them off faster than they were coming up. We started running.
That's my hell.
Running.
That's terrifying.
It was, I was itchy all over. I felt, you know, when you feel like there's something crawling on you and there's not.
Did one ever latch into you?
No. I mean, we were very good about doing like buddy checks. Mm-hmm. I think just like it's hard for people to kind of imagine not showering as much or being as clean, you also get like weirdly comfortable with who you're with. So like we'd be like, okay, it's not gonna be bad if we go through this 1 mile stretch and then check.
Yeah.
And so we'd just get through the part and then we'd like, we would look like, you know, in all the nooks and crannies.
So you guys were checking each other's like buttholes?
Not our
and
buttholes,
stuff?
But okay. Like as far up as the shorts go and maybe like glancing a little bit up them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good reason to treat your underwear because most people are wearing underwear that fits tightly. And I can't imagine that if there's an active coat of permethrin that a deer tick is going to penetrate past that.
Well, also, if you're a girl and you're wearing the underwear or the shorts with the built-in underwear.
Yeah.
And you wear underwear too.
Yeah.
Then you've got like a double
sure
squeeze
right
barrier around the thighs.
Yeah. So avoid the need to look at your buddy's butthole by just making sure that you're permethrin your
wear
stuff.
Wear 6 pairs of underwear.
Yeah, that too. Hike in a chastity belt soaked in permethrin.
No ticks in me. Neat. Okay, my next one. I'm going to start with a more obvious one. I hinted at this one last time. And I know Zach is going to have an opposite standpoint on it, but mine's give shelters a shot. you get a lot of bad rep for the shelters. People being all like, tenting's the way to go, you know, and they're not that bad, you know, and you'll make friends too. So what you do is you just strategically sandwich yourself between your friends. So you're not the one laying next to a rando, but even then, like, they're not going to cuddle you. The worst was one time I was in the shelter with this girl and her dog kept kicking me in the night. So that I didn't love. But apart from being kicked by a dog in the middle of the night and like the occasional snoring, it's nice because your gear's not wet in the morning, right? Like everyone's like, oh, tenting's so much better. And then they wake up and their tent's wet and they're taking like an extra half hour at lunch to dry out their gear. And you're like, huh, that's funny. I slept on mine as a pillow. Downsides, the further north you get, middle north, the more mice there are in the shelter, which kind of stinks. But you just don't sleep near the edges. Like you sleep with your head like a foot or two down from the back wall, and you stay at least like a foot from the side walls. And that's where the mice like to run, is around the perimeters. So you just don't put your head there or your body. And apart from that, your stuff stays dry.
Mm. Yeah, I actually don't necessarily disagree with the tip, because I don't advocate for my style of hiking. I just don't like sleeping in shelters.
I will put a big asterisk. Don't sleep in shelters in New Jersey. Don't do it.
Because of?
I sat down, I think I've said this on the podcast, I sat down for lunch at one of the shelters, and I heard a thud above my head, and I looked up, and there were three giant black snakes dangling from the ceiling above my head.
That's not fun.
I
the whole state was that way?
Probably scared. Well, I didn't give it a chance to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that...
Can you be racist against a state? Are you statist?
You can be safe.
You can be safe.
I don't think that...
I think you're statist. You, especially this is your inner
I
New Yorker
I don't like snakes.
Up. Yeah.
And yes, when comparing New York to New Jersey, one is significantly better than the other. but it's more so the snakes. Yeah. And I can deal
well,
with finding...
Well, I'm just saying that you're giving the stereotype to the entire state of New Jersey when this happened to you one time.
Well, here's the thing is if you knew ticks were all in Virginia, you'd probably start prepping in Tennessee and a little bit in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Because you're in the danger zone.
Right.
So any shelters near that danger zone,
yeah.
Also not convinced that they'll be snake free.
Yeah.
And if a mouse gets in my sleeping bag, I can live with that. If a snake gets in my sleeping bag, I'm going to die. I'm going to just have
you
a heart
would,
attack. My heart will stop
quit
beating.
Quit hiking forever on the spot.
It's just like, think of...
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah. Think about how that would feel.
Yeah, no, I would never try to talk anyone out of the shelters because it does obviously have that advantage that you speak to. I'm a sensitive sleeper. Like, I don't like strangers around me. I don't like, if somebody's snoring nearby, I'm not sleeping that night.
Well, you
I
wouldn't even sleep plugs. In the shelter with us in Wisconsin.
That's what I'm saying.
That was like, okay, cool guy.
I think I descended from a wolf or something like that because I need my own personal den. Like, also, this didn't really apply to the Wisconsin situation, but bugs. I like having a cocoon from the insects, and a shelter does not provide that.
Yeah. I mean, I would pull my sleeping bag over my head and be kind of good.
I get too hot.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to talk anyone out of the shelter definitely has a lot of advantages, but
it depends on what you hate more than other things. So yeah. For me, wet gear and being wet and waking up wet and just having to like, I don't like waking up early as is or leaving camp early, but I do because it's what makes sense. And the idea of adding on to waking up early and leaving camp early and it being kind of cold and having wet gear just kind of makes the day seem like a not great day for me.
So that segues actually to my next point. Very well. Well done, Chance.
Thank you.
And that's to dry out your gear.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And this can apply to if it gets damp overnight, whether from condensation or, you know, you get rain or you didn't set up properly. There's a lot of different situations. Or, you know, you get rained on while you're hiking and then you get to the shelter. There's a lot of scenarios in which your gear is going to get wet on the AT. And I highly advise that any opportunity you have to dry out your gear, i.e. the sun comes out and you've got a decent break spot with enough exposure to the sun, especially during the heat of the day. So between 11 and 2, I guess this is true for the spring months. In the summer, it'll be warm enough of the day that you could just dry it out in the sun whenever given the opportunity. But take any opportunity that you can to dry out your gear. Not only is that going to assure that you're going to get a better night's sleep that night having dry stuff, but it's also going to reduce your pack weight. Just carrying the extra water weight this goes back to the previous episode, is just unnecessary weight.
Get all the drops of water off your tent. You don't want those ounces.
It makes a difference. I'm telling you, it definitely does. But yeah, nothing worse than getting into like still a slightly damp sleeping bag, like at the foot of the sleeping bag. You want to make sure that your stuff is as dry as possible. And, you know, on the AT, it's not always possible to dry your stuff out. Like you can have consecutive days where it's just overcast and raining. But the days where you get the sun and you've got anything damp in your pack, take the opportunity to dry it out, because it's just going to make your day and your night so much better.
I'll also add a little tip is, like, don't be afraid of not having your pack and everything look neat and tidy in terms of, like, utilize the outside space. There's a lot of clips, a lot of buckles, a lot of straps. When my tent would be wet, I would just, like, basically start using myself and my backpack. We became one as a clothesline. And it was like anything we could clip to me in any way. And like, yeah, I didn't exactly look presentable, I think would be the best way to put it.
You wouldn't take yourself home to mom?
I would hope no one I knew saw me in the woods some of the times, because just of how much of a, like, I looked like I jumped into a trash can and jumped out and like whatever stuck. But
Chauncey the Grouch.
But then I cut off time that I would have had to stop and let the tent dry on one side, let it dry on the other side. It's just like, well, sun's out. Yeah. Sun's out, guns out.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'll be clipping like my extra pair of underwear or socks.
Yeah.
Big time. I think that is a great addition to the point. Okay, your next one.
Ooh, my next one. Okay.
We're flying through these. This apparently goes much faster when there's only two people.
I know. And we have less tangents.
Yeah.
Much less tangents. Okay, mine. I'm going to use your title for mine because I like it better than mine.
Okay.
Which is train vertically. I had had mine as include the stair climber. Mm. But specifically with the AT, there's a lot more ups and downs. And what I trained with was the stair climber, where I would do 40 minutes on the treadmill, 4 mile an hour pace, and then I would do 20 minutes on the stair climber. And granted, it did help that we were at elevation. But when I got to Georgia, like the stairs everyone complains about, I didn't know I was at the top when I got to the top. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, cool, we're at like the first checkpoint.
Yeah.
Right? Like I thinking back on it now, I'm like, okay, I was in really good shape. And a lot of that was attributed to doing the stair climber. The interesting thing about it that is also worth considering is how much the opposite sides of the hills, the ones that went down.
That's a great point.
I was not prepared for it. And if you can find like a way to train both on the stair climber, everyone thinks about training on those, you know, steps going up, but also find a way to train going down, because that'll be the surprise ass kicker that you don't expect, especially like for me, it happened going into Blood Mountain. That's not even, or from Blood Mountain down to Neal Gap, not even that far in, but I was like, okay, should have gone down the stair climber too.
Yeah. And I think if all you have access to is a gym, another thing that you could potentially do, and if there's a physical therapist out there that wants to call my bullshit on this, please do. But it's where you stand on a platform and then you're holding weight and you slowly step off. That might be the closest way to approximate the downhills. But for many people, they have access to just regular old stairs. Like, especially if you live in a city, get to a high rise, get a pack on with 25, 30 pounds. I'd say get as close to your actual AT pack weight as possible, or a little bit more if you want to get extra credit, and just go up and down the stairs for as long as you can withstand it mentally. Listen to a podcast, listen to us, or something that's actually good.
Us up and down stairs.
Just torture on top
of
torture.
That's building the mental strength.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I liked the first part of what you said, because I think of working out and I would think, okay, I'm going to go up and down the stairs and not stop and just, you know, rapid fire off for however long. But going slow is a smart way to try to train those muscles, because if you're going down a hill on the AT, chances are there's rocks, there's roots, there's wet leaves.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be like speeding down it like you're running down a staircase. You're going to be taking your time and watching your footing. So you almost want to practice those slow muscles.
For sure. And the strides are going to be inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you're going to be going down big rocks. Sometimes you're going to be taking baby steps because it's slippery.
Front step, side step.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the best way to approximate it is just to get out on the steepest hill or mountain near you and do that as much as possible. But I realize for a large part of the country, that's not going to be enough. You're not going to have something that will approximate the AT. So you got to do the best that you can. And I think stairs are, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. If you don't live in like the South, just ask someone, hey, where do people go sledding around here? And they'll point you to a hill. And then that should be enough.
Yeah. But to Chauncey's point, because this is one that we both had, and this is super important for the AT, is doing something like running on a flat surface. It will build your cardiovascular endurance, but it's not going to do much to prepare you for the AT. The AT is a lot of climbing and descending, and that's a very specific muscle group, and you're going to want to prepare your body for that. Because it's not just the muscles, it's also the ligaments and the tendons and just like strengthening every part of it. And running, unfortunately, it's better than nothing, but it's not the best thing.
Mm-hmm. If you want to imitate this, and let's say you live in Florida and it's flat, but you have kids, you could have your kids toss their toys all over the stairs, and then you could go down the stairs.
Yeah. It sounds like Home Alone.
Pick them up as you go down.
There you go.
That would be a good way. We put on your backpack.
We should make
your
kids, our own
dump your shit all over the
personal
stairs.
Personal training video.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good alternative.
I like it. Yeah, that's a super important tip. We should probably put that one at the top, but it's here, so you get it no matter what. My last one, this is something a gentleman by the name of Ian Mangiardi helped me prepare for my AT hike. And this is one of the areas where I thought perhaps he was crazy, but he strongly advised me not to send any mail drops on the AT. Cause I went in thinking like, this is how you prepare for a backpacking trip. I think a lot of the literature at the time said that like, that's what you should be doing too. And he just talked me out of it, and I couldn't have been more grateful. Holy shit. If there's a trail where you don't need to send, I won't say any. Maybe there's a couple of spots. We have an article on the Trek. Mara, I'll include that in the show notes here, or in our notes, so you can put it in the show notes. There's a couple of spots where the resupply is either limited or expensive. I still personally think I would just opt for the simplicity of not having to deal with the resupplies on the AT and just going to a grocery store, or in the few rare instances going to a convenience store, because it's super approachable. The grocery stores, especially in the southern half of the AT, are very affordable. Like relative to other places that I've lived, the food is even cheaper. And we've talked about this ad nauseum in the past, but your taste preferences change so much over the course of a thru hike. And the worst thing that you can do is buy 1,000 Clif Bars, because within 1 week of your hike, you're going to be so sick of Clif Bars. And I'm not throwing shade on Clif Bars, although most people do get sick of Clif Bars specifically. Chauncey's biting
about
her mouth.
Those mint chocolate chip Clif Bars.
I will say I did get a small box of Clif Bars the other day. I think I'm back. But, yeah, the AT is very approachable. There's tons of grocery stores. Again, you don't know what your taste preferences are going to be over the course of a thru hike, and having the flexibility to just walk into town and get the thing that you're craving at a reasonable price makes so much more sense than spending hundreds or thousands of dollars on gear, shipping yourself, paying for the cost of shipping yourself food, getting the food, realizing you either have too much or too little, so you still have to go supplement, and then the worst situation is that you have food that you're not at all excited to eat. A lot of people end up throwing it in a hiker box or giving it to their friends. It's just a wasted process. And this is something that I think a lot of first time through hikers make as a mistake. I was trying very hard to make this mistake myself, and fortunately I had someone talk me out of it. And I'm now trying to pay that tip forward to you guys. The exceptions to this is if you have strict dietary requirements. Let's say you're eating like a strict vegan diet or you're celiac. There are scenarios where it does make sense, and those are a couple of them. I don't have to outline all of the examples, but like if you are pretty particular about what you're eating, then a resupply can probably make more sense. And you're probably going to be cooking a lot of your food, or you're having stuff specialty made, or you have something like Good to Go that has a lot of gluten-free or vegetarian options, et cetera, et cetera. But the other example is if like you just really love dehydrating food, like you're a chef in another lifetime and you want to eat the things that you're preparing and you're really good at that, then by all means, like ignore what I'm saying. But I would say the vast, vast, vast majority of people do not fit that category. Like I know people that buy dehydrators before they're through hike thinking that they're going to get good at it. And no one's good at anything cooking related when they first start. Like you have to make a lot of mistakes. So if you're going to do that, I'd say start at least a year in advance and like really tune in the recipes that you're making, because there's nothing worse than eating some slop that you've made yourself that tastes like garbage just because you've made it. I would much rather just eat like a Knorr or a ramen or pack something out from town or a lot of other options.
Agreed. I'll give an example. Going up, where were we going? I don't remember what the next town was, but it was after Cheoabald. Cheoabald was our first night. And so basically we had 3 days between where we were, Cheoabald the first night, night, then town, because I had something getting sent to me in the mail, I can't remember what, and we realized that the pacing that we were doing was set to get us there on Saturday at, like, if we absolutely hauled, it would be like 2 p.m., 3 p.m., the absolute earliest if we were really busting ass. Post office closed at noon on Saturday. And then we were like, okay, well, we're still in the beginning of our hike, like, flashback to the last episode about, you know, not blowing your budget in the beginning of the trail. We were like, well, if we get into town and we have to stay somewhere Saturday night and then Sunday night and then get the mail Sunday, that's going to stink too. And so we ended up deciding to do three, it was 2 8-mile days and 1 7-mile day, which we had been doing 20s out the gate.
Yeah.
And feeling good because, again,
so you're just twiddling your thumbs for most of the day.
It was like we were bored. Yeah. But we were also like, there's no, like, we were sleeping in the morning, really being slow about it, but we were trying to save money by not having to stay in town longer than we needed to, but we also weren't going to make it there unless we, like, killed ourselves to get there or slowed it majorly down to get there. And it was all based around a package that there was the strong thought of, do I really need what's in this box? And it setting yourself up for those situations, it's just not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I that's a really good point that I should have mentioned, but that's just the timing game of sending resupplies can be a major nightmare. And a lot of places, some post offices aren't even open on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So like two-sevenths of the time, the place is not even open, and you run into the scenario that Chance just outlined. So unless you fit into the category of, like, you really love dehydrating stuff and you're excited to eat your own meals, or you're eating a very particular diet, just don't do boxes. There might be a couple of exceptions, but by and large, your plan overall should just be like, I'm going to hike into town. I'm going to hike out with 2 sub sandwiches and 12 Snickers bars or whatever it might be, because your tastes are going to change. Just go that route and you're going to be so much happier, I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a quick break to bring you a word from our buddies at Bedrock Sandals. In 2011, Nick and Dan were hand-making the first pairs of Bedrock sandals for themselves and friends while working river restoration jobs in Northern California. Fast forward to today, and Bedrock Sandals, now based in Missoula, Montana, is the elite hiking sandal company. From their award-winning uber-durable Cairn to the minimalist classic sandal, Bedrock has the perfect trekking sandal for you. Used by day hikers and through hikers alike, Bedrock sandals are comfortable, lightweight, allow for maximum breathability, and feature Spider-Man-like caliber grip. Bedrock's durable designs are resolable and repairable, letting you trek further with a cleaner footprint. Bedrock's products are proudly plastic-free, using 100% recycled cardboard and printed with algae ink. Chance and I are both Bedrock enthusiasts ourselves. Chance rocked her Bedrocks the entire duration of the Trans-Catalina Trail, in addition to the rest of the SoCal trip, including her CrossFit experience. My Cairn 3D adventure sandals have been a staple for me for many day hikes, shorter backpacking trips, and pretty much any time I venture outdoors when it's warmer weather. And OG listeners might recall that Ball Flap, our guest in episode number 10, wore exclusively Bedrocks on his PCT thru-hike, as have many other thru-hikers who bask in the minimalist footwear lifestyle. If you're looking for a camp shoe or a lightweight option on a trail with less rugged terrain, the Bedrock Classic is my go-to. For more rugged trails, I opt for the Cairn 3D Pro 2 sandals. If you're unsure of which model is right for you, Bedrock has an easy-to-navigate comparison page, which will easily match you with the right pair. So whether you're looking for your next camp shoe or uber high-quality minimalist footwear for your upcoming treks, head to bedrocksandals.com today. Again, that's bedrocksandals.com, and let them know your pals at Backpacker Radio sent you. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, so for I'll give a little backstory to my third one, which is that I was a little ballsier with this than probably a first-time hiker would be because I did the PCT before it. But I didn't really research anything about the AT because I wasn't really wanting to do it after the PCT. I had no interest in it. I just didn't care. And then I got so sick of my old job that I was like, it put me on anything. But to make it better for myself, I didn't really research any parts of it. Like, I didn't know when I was getting to Max Patch. I didn't know when I was getting to McAfee's Knob. I didn't research any of, like, the Dragon's Tooth or any of that cool stuff because I didn't want to know, and I wanted it to be a surprise on its own. It's really hard to have the proper maps, have the proper gear, have the proper stuff, and mess up just because you don't know, like, what's up ahead on the trail on the AT. It's not really, like, a technically challenging trail, especially if you're going Nobo. But what I would recommend is instead of putting as much research into what's going to be coming up on the trail, what sites you're going to see, like that sort of stuff, I would recommend researching the areas that you're going to be hiking through. Like, not, oh, I'm going to be at McAfee Knob, what does this like view look like? But, oh, I'm going through the Nantahala National Forest. Like, what's happened here? What's the history behind the forest? Because I've obviously been researching a lot about it, but there's a lot of really cool stuff that's happened down there. Like, there's a lot of things with logging and the railroads and the Civil War, where it's like you get a much better appreciation for where you're hiking through when you know kind of the history around it. And with the AT, it's such a history deep trail being on the East Coast where, like, America in the white sense was founded. And where the Cherokee removal and, like, the Indian removal started and everything. There's a lot of deep history there that you walk literally right through. And I think that would be cooler to know going into it than what a view looks like or when it's going
to
come up.
Yeah, and it maintains more of the element of surprise to not know that stuff. Yeah, I think we've talked about this in the past, but neither of us went into our first thru hikes or really either through hike, knowing much about anything that we were getting ourselves into. Like, I met Baltimore Jack. I think he passed before you hike it, pretty sure. And I didn't even know who he was. Maybe this is an example of why you should do some research, but
if you want to know more about Baltimore Jack, listen to the pretzel episode.
Yeah, Baltimore Jack was a larger-than-life trail angel. I think he hiked the AT something like 9 times in total.
We've got his Little Debbie's cutout over there.
Yep, gift from our man Pretzel. But, yeah, I guess this is an example that goes contrary to the point I'm realizing now, because it would have been good to know, like, oh, this guy's a legend, but I had a very brief conversation and I just kept hiking.
But that's also not, like, a view, you know? Like, I feel like people will be like, okay, what's, you know, when am I going to hit this? When am I going to hit that? Where is this hostel going to be? And, like, that's kind of stuff that you don't need to know to survive the trail.
Certainly don't need it to survive, yeah.
So spend that time, because you're going to want to feel like you've prepped for the trail, right? And if you're not sending these resupply boxes and you're not looking up the views, you're going to feel anxious that you haven't done enough and you're not prepared. Read about, like, the areas you're going to be going through.
Yeah. Yeah, of any trail where you don't need to do logistical or reconnaissance of the upcoming trail to Chauncey's Point, it's the AT. Like, you can kind of just wing it. The things you should prep is, and this goes to, so we had our first chat with our pal MG, and I think the one thing that you would want to prepare a little bit, in addition to the mental prep, which I outlined in the previous episode, is gear. because mm-hmm. we talked her out of carrying some items that we both agreed that were just totally excessive. And yes. that's normal for
and
somebody.
And I'm not
taking,
saying don't research your gear. That would be right. terrible advice.
No, but I'm saying like if you're going to allocate that time to something else, the gear research is a way better way to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you can, this is tricky, but pull whatever favors you can to have a thru hiker give you like a ocular shakedown because, you know, you don't want to rely on like a green vested guru at REI because I think the popular backpacking ideas.
They didn't know what darn toughs were.
Yeah, I think they're much more like of the Boy Scout mentality, and there's one way to go about backpacking, and it's a little bit heavier versus the thru-hiking style of backpacking, which you do enough miles and everyone kind of migrates in that direction. So you're better off talking to somebody who's done this specific adventure that can talk you out of specific items in your pack.
I don't want to throw like a lot of shade at REI because it is a great place. The reason why I agree with you is because not everyone there, like there, it's a general outdoor store, right? Not everyone is specifically
the person
thru
you're talking to might be like a expert in fly fishing.
So I had gone to the customer service counter because you can bring back your darn tufts and exchange them. And this person didn't happen to know that. And I was explaining to them, you know, how I got the holes in my socks. And they were trying to explain to me that it was because I didn't bring the right socks. And I was like, no, I don't think you understand. Yeah. And they're like, well, it's just clearly not the right pair of socks for you. And I was like, oh my God, yeah. I'll just take them back now.
So was that REI's warranty or Darn Tough? Because I think the Darn Tough lifetime warranty is through Darn Tough.
But REI also has a within 1 year warranty right. if okay. you have a membership. Okay.
Were you backpacking when when REI also had the lifetime warranty?
I mean, I've definitely exchanged Darn Toughs after a year there.
Yeah.
So probably.
That used to be, I think they changed that in like 2013 or so, but it used to just be lifetime everything. Yeah. And then they're like, wait a second, everyone's returning everything all yeah. the time.
But yeah, no, that's, I mean, they're very knowledgeable on a lot of different things, but because they're very knowledgeable on a lot of different things, they're not ultra knowledgeable on one specific thing, which is thru hiking.
And thru hiking is a very extreme niche thing. Niche. It's not a fair expectation to have mm-mm. somebody working a retail job to know the nuances of a half year backpacking trip. Right. It's just not a fair expectation.
And you don't really want that person giving all the camping advice to the people that aren't like paying attention to weight.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. So if you can, you know, go on the Ultralight subreddit, the AT subreddit, a Facebook group, God willing. but see if you can find someone who's nice enough to give you a shakedown, because I've done probably 5 this year, one way or the other. And like the people that are very well researched, I can find like 1 or 2 small things. Like I'm saving them 6 ounces at best. Like if you do enough research, there's also a gray area of like, I personally wouldn't bring this, but this is a personal preference thing. So I'm not going to talk you out of it, but this might be the first thing that you send home.
Now that I'm thinking about this, like I feel like we're going to kick ourselves because this is a good idea if I had had it 2 weeks ago, which is that it wouldn't be the worst idea to do an episode that is a shakedown for someone. Like if we had recorded MG's shakedown,
yeah.
I think people would have listened to that.
For sure.
Because we were doing it specifically for someone, not just in general.
Right.
With their list.
I'm always just fearful of that being more visually based than, like, I don't know if that makes good audio content, but yeah. Wait, let us
all
know.
Right, scrap that.
We'll podcast at thetrek.co because I don't think you're the only person to think that that's a good idea, and I don't want to be, I'm wrong a lot. So there's that.
Well, I mean, we also wouldn't be looking at anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We talked about doing that at a live event. Maybe we'll do that in the...
Oh, we could do that in, well, wherever we end up.
At the Schmrail Schmaze.
At... at Charlesville, Charlotte's. Wait, I'm trying to combine Asheville and Charlotte, and then I keep getting them confused in my head because both names sound right.
Yeah, Charlottesville is a place, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
Ashlet.
that is all we have. I still have. No, I just have one tip.
Go on.
No, I think we're going to close the door on the AT stuff. Unless you guys really want a part 3, I'm sure we could muster up something. There's a lot to say about this trail, especially because it ends up being a first thru hike for the vast majority of people. but I think I feel confident that we covered the big items between these two episodes.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to start, like, if we were to go further, we'd start going into more just, like, trail in general specific tips mm-hmm. and not AT specific tips.
Yeah. True. Okay.
Cool.
To the Trek propaganda portion of today's show, we're going to do a very brief highlight. This is one compiled by the Trek's amazing editor and lead writer. That is Kelly Floro. This is the best down jackets for thru-hiking. I'm not even going to list them, but I will highlight the fact that they're broken down into different categories and there's different awards given, such as best made in the USA down jacket, best value down jacket, best down / synthetic hybrid jacket, warmest ultralight down jacket, and more. I think there's like 8 to 10 categories in total. But I guess as a sort of a segue on what we were doing previously, I feel like it could be helpful to talk about what we use for our puffies. I think we both are rocking the same brand.
Montbel.
They're not sponsors, although I guess we should disclose that we do get this stuff for free. I didn't. Oh, you paid for yours?
Made me feel like a loser for it.
Sorry.
Well, I walked into the store in Denver and I said, I like this. And I took it to the counter and I paid for it like every other normal person.
Yeah. I didn't pay for mine, like every other abnormal person.
Next, I'm going to go in there and be like, my name's Zach Davis. I own the Trek.
Zach, your hair's looking much better these days. What happened?
Thanks, I grew it out.
But this specific model that I use, and I've been using this not exclusively, but primarily since the PCT in 2017. It's seen a lot of miles. I love this thing. It is worn down a little bit. It's not quite as lofty as it was, but that's just how it goes with down anything. Is the Montbel Plasma 1000 Alpine Down Parka. That is a mouthful. We'll include it in the show notes. There's no affiliate to the Trek for this. I just honestly really love this jacket. And I will say, I really like the colorway of this particular jacket. I don't even think they make it anymore, but it's like a bright green with orange accents. I feel like it's a good looking jacket.
Oh, is that the one that you're always wearing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I wear it a lot.
I'm trying to find the specific name of mine. It's the Anorak something.
Yeah, that's Montbel. I think the most popular Anorak Montbel down jacket.
I even spell X. Oh, wait, I just saw it.
But Montbel is an awesome company.
X-Lite Down Anorak.
Yeah. They're based out of Japan, but they have headquarters here in the U.S. There's a Montbel store in Boulder. Is there one in Denver?
Anything? Yes, there's one in downtown Denver. Anything that you get that you're like, oh, the Ghost Whisperer or whatever people get for their puffy, and if you have a little extra budget, I guarantee Montbel's is lighter, but it's also warmer. Which
yeah.
is weird for me.
The Ghost Whisperer, I think, is a pretty overrated jacket.
Yes.
It's nice because it's light, but it's just not warm enough.
No, it's not warm enough, in my opinion.
It's good for, like, summer backpacking. And.
But my Anorak from Montbel is lighter than my Ghost Whisperer.
Yeah.
And it's a quarter zip. So what I liked about it is that it has the, basically, sweatshirt pocket that goes all the way through. And for the AT specifically, I knew starting in the beginning of March, it would be cold. And having the not full zipper of it kept my core warmer, mm-hmm. and I very much did appreciate that.
Yeah, Montbel makes really good stuff. Mm-hmm. I also have a Rab jacket that I got a couple years ago, and I don't know the specific model, but it might be better than the Montbel. But it's so expensive that I can't even recommend it, honestly. No one should pay that much money. And then Mara had actually highlighted an article that I'm not going to mention because by the time you hear this, it won't be relevant. But we have teamed up with Garage Grown Gear to do a massive giveaway. Again, by the time you hear this, it'll be done. So what I'm plugging here is to get on the Trek's newsletter, because if you want to make sure that you're not missing future giveaways, I think the same thing happened with the Badger sponsorship this year. By the time I mentioned it was too late. This is how much foresight I have when planning this stuff. If you don't want to miss the stuff, get on the Trek's newsletter, and the link for that will be in the show notes as well. Okay.
Neat.
We're going to do a change of pace here and actually do a hiking-themed Triple Crown. It's been a minute. Do you want to introduce it?
Yes. This is going to be the Triple Crown of hikers you want to hike with. Is that what it was?
Traits you want in a hiking partner.
Same thing.
No.
What?
Because a hiker is a person and a trait is a
okay, fine.
Characteristic.
Okay, Fine. I'll start.
Okay.
Let me find my note. Okay. My first trait.
You're just going to be listing hikers now?
No, I wrote down three. My first trait in someone that you would want, is it specifically like this type of long distance hike or is it just like a hike?
I didn't specify. I was thinking long distance, but it could be whatever.
Let's think the AT.
Yeah, sure.
Think the AT.
Yeah, we'll call this
AT.
Keep
it on brand.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. My first trait that I would want this person to have is I want them to like hiking. Because having someone that you have to hike the AT with that doesn't like hiking, that would be bad from the start.
I think you're saying that in jest, but that's honestly like a really good point because you will meet those people that are just constantly complaining.
No, you remember the 10 seconds in between my texts where I was like, eh, and then I was like, no, I got an idea. That was because I thought of likes hiking, and I was like, actually, these are some good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good one.
I
like hiking.
Yes.
Because the saying is you are the average of the seven closest people to you. And if everyone's a fucking bummer around you, that's going to rub off real quickly. So that's a good lesson that if you land in a hiking group and they just are a little bit too melancholy or they see the glass half empty all the time, there's a lot of good people on trail. Maybe you should bounce out and find someone that you drive with a little bit better.
Yes, misery loves company, and getting out of a good PMA is much easier than getting back into a good PMA.
What's a PMA?
Positive mental attitude.
Oh. Sounds like a brochure. this is much more specific than I think the first example from Chance, but and this goes to Chance's shelter recommendation, is someone who doesn't snore.
Okay. Yeah. You'll have to test sleeping near them for that.
Yeah. I mean, we're just so like, this is designing a player in Madden or NBA 2K.
Yes.
And you get to like pick the qualities, you know. I'm bringing snore down to zero or 100, whatever.
I like that. Sense.
But I'm so light of a sleeper. Even with I don't like sleeping with earplugs. Is that the right word? They just are uncomfortable to me, especially because I sleep on my side. That someone snoring, especially if they're loud enough, they can blast right through the protection.
I've got a hot take though.
Okay.
I'm not anti-snorer.
No.
Because like you hear less nature noises in the night.
Would
if there's
rather,
a snorer, you don't hear the bear walking around breathing heavy if the guy next to you is just like making a symphony in his sleep.
Because a bear's not going to come up to some snoring person. They're going to be like, the fuck is this?
They'll probably go because they're making the noise, so they'll go check them out first.
Oh, so you're saying the snoring people are going to attract the bears?
Well, no, they will. They'll keep you from hearing the sounds and getting paranoid
I know what you're saying, but I'm curious if the snoring affects the wildlife in one way or the other. Or it doesn't matter because ignorance is bliss.
I think ignorance is bliss, and I think it's just like two unrelated pros. Yeah. Whereas if wildlife were to also come, they'd probably check out the snoring.
You can
first.
Sleep through the sound of somebody snoring?
Yeah, it's like white noise.
Yeah, to me it's whatever, it's black noise. That's the opposite of white noise. It's too, I can't. I would rather hear the rustling of an animal than someone snoring.
No, I'd take a snorer any day over the sounds of nature.
Okay. snake draft. Damn, I have a lot of good examples here. I'm going to go with someone that knows when to back off. Some people are much more... They like the nonstop camaraderie, just constant conversations all the time. And that's not me. I need space. Like if we're going to be doing this for weeks or months, if it's, you know, 100-mile trail, I can do the, we're going to hang out all the time. That's fine. But if it's months long, like there's going to be, I will personally need some time to just like process my own thoughts, not be engrossed in conversation. Like I like to be introspective and that's hard to do when you're talking to somebody.
Yeah. Socially aware or able to pick up on
someone
cues.
That just like likes independence, I guess.
Okay.
Someone who has an independent streak.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. I don't really have much to say on that one.
Okay.
Okay.
You're more of a constant hanger outer, aren't you?
At camp, yes, but here I'm very weird about it. I like making friends, but I only like having to do it once because it's exhausting. So I like making
you do stick with your groups.
Hiking friends, and then I like sticking with them because then I don't have to talk to them, but we're still like in each other's company.
Yeah.
Not that I don't ever talk to them, but you're not doing that small talk at every campsite because you're not making new friends every time.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of just like know each other better where you like know like, oh, he just wants to chill over there.
Yeah. That was one thing I actually really enjoyed about the AT was I was hiking at a, I don't know, inconsistent pace, slightly fast. I don't even know what was happening, but I was meeting a lot of different groups along the way. And for me personally, I preferred that.
I guess like the pessimistic side of my brain is just like, it's exhausting having small talk conversations with people. And if I'm meeting people that I'm talking to over and over and over, like at, per se, every shelter or whatever it might be, and I'm just having these short conversations, I'm probably never going to see them again. So it's like, wow, I'm expending energy that's just like poofing off into the wind, right?
Yeah. But you never know when it's just you're going to meet someone for 5 minutes or when they're going to keep popping up every other week down the trail.
Yeah.
Because like Melissa, previous guest of the show, we crossed paths over a dozen times along the AT. And like, there's a lot of people where you do just meet them once, but I enjoyed that format.
No, in those situations, I'd probably then end up starting to get to know them. But it's just like the, if I get to camp and there's like six other people there, I'm probably like not going up and introducing myself and asking them what their favorite part of their day was.
It's funny because you are such a social hiker from the standpoint of like, you do buddy up, but you're not an outgoing hiker.
Yeah, but that's the key, because by buddying up, then they talk to the people.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. They're doing the heavy lifting for you.
Yeah, it's all a ploy.
Okay.
All right. Okay, my second one. This is, we're going back to the person that you're giving traits to.
Yeah.
Prefers to go ultra not light. So this is someone who insists on carrying everything, including your stuff too. And they're going to be like, really, it's too easy.
Yeah.
I need to carry your tent and your, you know, whatever weighs the most, and I'll hike at your pace.
Is there
basically a camel?
Is there a story to back this up, or is this just like a dream trait?
No, you said just ideal traits.
Okay.
Just,
I wasn't sure if this is something that like existed in reality.
No, I'm picking like someone that doesn't, I don't think this person exists, but yeah, just someone that, you know, is just, it's like a canoe.
Well, I do know for some, I guess this applies more so to ladies. There's probably exceptions to this, but they find partners on trail and they can get rid of their shelter. That's one way to shed weight. And then they end up sharing other stuff like water filters or potentially a stove. There are items.
In practicality, it doesn't ever end up working.
Yeah.
I would say, because you still want your own stuff, right? Like, I wouldn't just
Melissa
be like, hey, let
too.
Me not carry my own stuff.
Right.
But the idea of an ideal trait being just like...
But I certainly know a lot of people that ditch their tents when they found their like, emotional companion.
I want this person to be someone that's not actually human, like maybe like R2-D2, who just like beep boop bops behind you.
Yeah,
and
I think you're referring to an actual camel.
Yeah.
Or so it sounds like you're ready for
alpacas.
The CBT. Yep.
Yeah.
Throwback to Cindy Ross for sure.
Yeah, give me an alpaca. That's okay. An ideal trait to my hiking partner. They are an alpaca.
BA farm animal. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. My third trait is they are a chef.
Mm.
That's their day profession, but not like a chef that doesn't chef outside of chefing. You know how like sometimes like a masseuse won't come home and just start massaging.
Sure.
Because like work is work, but I want a chef that's so chefy that they chef it up at work and then are also just dying to chef it up for you at camp.
Just nonstop chef
yeah,
stuff all
like,
the time.
Yeah, just like, hey, I made this queso. Who wants to try it? Oh, I made too much.
I think someone who is culinarily inclined doesn't just turn it on and off, right? They're not going to just have like a mac and cheese, or if they are going to have mac and cheese, they're going to spice it up in some way.
I don't know. I feel like I would just want to be lazy, but that's also me. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're not a chef.
I am also not a chef.
Yeah.
But if you get the combo of prefers to go ultra not light and a chef,
yeah,
then imagine how many fresh food items they're going to pack out to chef it up with at night.
You would be a popular person on trail for sure.
Yeah. You know,
we did a trip to Moab a few years ago, and one of the guys in our group is actually a chef, and he prepared our meals for us while we were out there. And it was like some of the best backcountry food. It wasn't like...
Exactly.
It was around a campfire, so the things you can get away with is a little bit different. Like we had a cast iron pan
okay,
and stuff.
Okay, but yeah, that goes into prefers to go ultra not light.
There
then
you
would still have the
Someone's
cast iron pan.
Carrying that 30-pound cast iron pan.
I thought this through.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this is a good partner for sure.
Yeah. And they like hiking.
Yeah, yeah. I have a food-related one, so I'm going to skip that, and I'm going to go with somebody who's just DTF for random adventures.
I thought you were just supposed to say DTF.
Someone who just likes to fuck.
Someone who just wants to fuck. Ideal trait in a
when I'm all
murder.
Horned up in the woods, I'm going to need something. No, someone who likes adventures. Like you want the person in your group to be the yes person, right? Like
yeah.
If you get a wild hair up your ass, you don't want to be like, yeah, well, but we have to be at XYZ by... No, you're like... We're out here to have the time of our lives. We're going to do some weird shit. Like, I want somebody who's all on board and adding to that energy.
Yeah, I would also, like, I would even tone it down a level to not too structured. Because you want the person who's going to be down for, like, a random ass zero in some strange place because of some random circumstance that had not been planned, right? Yeah. Where it's like, should we just take the day off at this shelter because it's snowing and it's like a snow day and we're going to make a big snowman and do all these things.
For sure.
And you want the people that are going to be like, yeah, let's go knock down some like snow from the trees and play with it.
Yeah. No, I'm too type A because I will be the person in the group that'll be like, but we have to blah, blah, blah. So, but I can be easily influenced, especially in the context of a through hike. So I need the help. I need someone to nudge me.
Yeah, if I was like, yeah, but Zach, I've got these three PBRs in my backpack.
Once beer's involved, it's all over.
Exactly. Yeah. See, you're persuadable.
Yeah.
You need someone who is committed.
Or someone say alcoholic. But
committed, but persuadable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are good traits.
For sure. And I think I was easily persuadable on the AT when the time crunch wasn't as strong. But Jabba and I still fucked off quite a bit on the PCT. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh on myself. Either way, it's fun to fuck off.
Yes. Work hard, play hard.
Yeah. Any honorable mentions?
I'll take videos.
That's a good one.
You had to take photos of your friends.
Well, that was for the actual panel portion, but... The other thing...
Well, I think my brain just cleared the cache.
You just went back 5 minutes. Like, the other one I was going to mention, and this is, I think, similar, but someone who's going to share their platinum snacks.
Okay.
Like, it's one thing for you to share, you know, like, the bottom of your beef jerky bag. Like, okay, that's cool. But someone who's going to share their double stuffed Oreo with you, that's a keeper.
Sounds like someone who's preferring to go ultra not light and also possibly a chef.
But they have to have the selflessness too. They could be carrying all this shit and being like, you can enjoy watching me, sucker.
I just looked at my list and like you saw me just pause for a second there because I realized I could have gotten all these in a person who was just like, yeah, I'm hungry. Go away. And how sad would that be?
Making like a delicious omelet.
On a cast iron. Well, that's why you packed ramen, right?
Yeah, I guess he didn't really complete the package there. Well.
Oh, man. I'm glad you got to see me with this set.
And I forgot to include this in the notes, but we do have a listener voicemail.
Ooh.
Do you want to?
We love those.
Do you want to hum a song while I pull this up?
Do, 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 do.
Jeopardy.
Do, do, do. Do, 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 do.
Okay, here it is. Do, do, do,
do. Hiya, Backpacker Radio. I have a question regarding money on the trail. So, do most people carry cash or card or both? And also, do some of the small towns or hostels only accept one or the other? Also, if you're carrying cash, how do you stop the notes from getting soggy? Like, here in the UK, we have these, like, plasticky notes. Do you have those ones?
They're doing this.
If not, how do you keep them getting wet and damaged? Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
You cannot tell me that the last voicemail we got was from someone with a British accent, and we were sitting here saying, or not British, but maybe
Irish.
It was a European accent of some
Irish.
Sort. Irish.
Yeah.
And we're sitting
I think
here,
more international than we realize.
We're saying, like,
because it's just you and me in a room, and it feels like we're talking to nobody, and then we're getting voicemails from people all around the world.
Yeah, but okay, so we were talking about how great the sound of their voice was and how they could leave us voicemails
this is
any
another
day.
Excellent accent.
And now we've got someone with a British accent talking about soggy notes, and they're not doing that specifically to milk it. Right? Like, they're not throwing in those words on purpose.
Yeah, I do think that that's just their own vernacular. But if you are just using phrases that
do more.
Yeah, do more. We like this. This makes us feel cool.
We like this.
Yeah. But it's a good question. So I'm more curious to get your answer because, one, I hiked in 2011 drink. So I think what applied then might not be totally reflective of what's true today. Also, I can't say that my memory is that good. I will say I always have a policy to carry cash on me when I'm through hiking just because you never know when you're going to need it.
Yeah, I'll usually carry I started the trail with maybe like 200 in cash, just in case. Like, you never know. And then...
Please don't mug chance.
That's why I'm saying I started the trail. That's not how it went. Mm. But the cash was... here's exactly where to rob me. it was always in like a Ziploc bag in like the very bottom of my pack. Because like I would always just use my cards when I was places. I used my card on mostly everything. The reason why cash is nice is if you have like some of it in fives and ones and like tens, then if you're getting a ride into town and you end up like having someone let you crash at their place or do laundry or take a shower or something and you want to either like pay for your shower that's $3 in cash or you want to maybe give like $5 to the person who gave you a hitch for gas, you've got cash on you, and that's when you'll see everyone fumbling for it, which is why I keep it at the very bottom of my pack, is, you know, those are the circumstances where I have time to get to it. But you really don't need cash.
Yeah. I
mean, you do for that stuff.
I was going to say, so if memory serves, to your point, like paying for a $3 shower, if memory serves, it was hard to pay for that stuff with a credit card or debit card.
Right. I mean, you'd get the people, though, that, like, the times that would be a thing would be a lot of the times also at hostels where it's, like, a bunk is $10, the shower's $3, the laundry is, you know, whatever, and then you just pay for it at the end.
But some people do just come in to get a shower and bounce.
That's true, and that's why having a little cash is nice.
For sure. And Chance also mentioned that, you know, if you get a ride somewhere, it's always nice when someone does something nice for you to offer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say in most scenarios, they're not going to let you pay, but you should always offer, and sometimes they will accept it and you should pay it because you're getting a service. And in that scenario, it's really nice to have cash. To prevent your notes from getting soggy, I go through the same method.
What's wrong with a soggy note?
It has the potential to rip.
I just like to live my life on the edge.
You just wanted to say soggy note.
Yeah.
But yeah, a Ziploc bag is, you'll find on the trail, Ziploc bags are everywhere. They're omnipresent.
And that was one of my honorable mentions, is bring more Ziplocs than you think you need.
Yeah.
I would keep like a little handful of Ziplocs in my bag. And then if I needed a Ziploc, I just had like five.
Because they weigh nothing.
It's like hair ties if you're a girl. Sure. That's the best way for me to compare it. It's like hair ties.
Yeah, and if you want to be the popular person when you go to a resupply, you know, you buy the smallest quantity of durable Ziploc bags. It's still going to be way more than you need for the upcoming stretch trail, but I guarantee you that you'll have no problem getting rid of them to your other hiking friends.
Here's another quick pro tip. It will make it so much easier for you to pack your food in a small way, where, like, instead of you bringing a bag of or a sleeve of Oreos in one of those like cases, if you dump them all into a Ziploc, or like I would do that with Goldfish, or honestly really anything, mac and cheese, we'd buy them in the boxes, the Kraft boxes, and then we'd dump them into a Ziploc to get rid of the box shape.
Yeah, or like you get like a box of granola bars. You can almost always break down your food into a smaller amount of packaging by having Ziplocs.
Key here is, because you're not putting like soggy PB&Js in them, this isn't just like a town to town 40 miles throw them all out kind of thing. Like, we would have six Ziplocs that would last us like states.
Sure.
So just before you crucify us for that one.
But I mean, you're also, even if someone wanted to crucify you, you're using way less plastic in the context of a thru hike than I think like a normal day to day.
It's true.
So, you know, even if you're not being the most green through hiker, you're still being greener than I think most people. But thank you to, I don't know if she said her name, so I'm not going to say it. But thank you to
Soggy Notes.
Soggy Notes for your soggy noted question. Five-star review. You want to take this?
Sure. Typed in my password wrong. Ooh. Here we go. Five-star review. It's perfect. We read this one.
Do we do this one?
Yeah, because I said, oh, I love when they start that way, and I almost just said that again.
I think because we had one show. I think it was when I prepared the show notes. Because Mara didn't do it, I pulled up the review, and that might have been the scenario.
Okay, should we make one up?
Yeah.
Dear Zach and Chance,
I like when your notes are soggy.
You guys make the best podcasts. They are so good.
You inspire me to love better.
I didn't love at all. And then I found your podcast, and now I've found ways to love.
My libido is up by 45%.
I'm not sure why this arouses me.
But I'm very aroused.
So thank you, and don't stop.
Eggplant.
Thanks, eggplant.
No, it was an eggplant emoji.
Oh, I thought that was the name of the person who submitted it.
I mean, maybe that's their trail name now.
Oh, eggplant, always giving us a laugh.
Thank you to our Chuck Norris Award winners on Patreon. That is Andrew, Austin McDaniel, Jason Lawrence, Christopher Marshburn, Sawyer Products, Brad and Blair from 13 Adventures, Brent Stenberg, Patrick C. and Cialo, Brandon Spilker, and Matt Sukup. You can follow us on social at Backpacker Radio on TikTok and Instagram, at Backpacker Pod on Twitter, Facebook.com/Backpacker Radio. You can follow Chance.
You can find me on Instagram at Juliana_Chauncey, and you can get my book, Hiking from Home, A Long Distance Hiking Guide for Family and Friends, on Amazon.
This is a AT episode, so you can get Appalachian Trials on all the places that you get books, basically just Amazon. Thank you so much for... Should we do a code word?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are we still giving out stickers? Are we actually following up on this?
Yes, I mailed a envelope with stickers and stamps tomorrow.
Nice. I hope you did a better job mailing the stamps than I did.
Specifically, yes. I got the ones that were in like the booklets rather than spinning a spool of them and shoving them into an envelope as hard as I could.
Not my finest
to mail them 20 minutes across town.
Yeah. I know I could have just brought them at the next podcast, but I thought I was being cool. When was the last time we actually sent out stickers?
Oh, we've been sending them out.
We have? Okay. This is outside of my department now because I was so bad at it before.
No, we were talking about on Monday how the way that we know that things are flowing smoothly with these task handoffs is that I don't notice a difference. Mm. And I was like, if I don't notice a difference, technically that means it's going so smooth.
Yeah.
That I just don't notice.
Sure.
And we decided that was a good thing.
Okay. So was Elise sending them out before?
No. We weren't doing code words for a bit.
But we've been doing them in like the recent episodes.
And for those, Mara sending them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. The recent ones were when we started talking about, hey, how are we going to send these stickers? Because I offered to do that, and then I remembered I hate going to the post office, which is not news.
Yeah. I can't keep up with my life as is.
No.
Code word, though.
Soggy notes.
Love it. Perfect. Ace the test. Thank you so much for listening, and happy hiking.
Bye.
This game has gone on long enough. Shit. Are you doing an accent?
Yeah, I was doing a British accent. It was a British accent.
That was British?
Yeah, I had it so good in my head. I was doing a really good British accent. It doesn't matter. Anyway.